And please join me in giving a big welcome to our main speaker, Afsi V from Toronto, Ontario.
Hi, everyone. Good evening. My name is Afsi, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. And thank you so much for inviting me to be with you this evening and to share my experience, strength, and hope. And Brian, that was amazing. Thank you so much for that beautiful and powerful share. Thank you. It's amazing. You know, we all come from different walks of life and we all have our own stories. But when I sit in an AA meeting, I just connect. I connect with you all because deep down to our core, we all have that same soul sickness, that same emptiness, right? And, you know, when I just sit here and I become present to the miracle of God in my life. And I'm so grateful to be here with you tonight. It's way past my bedtime right now. It's 11:30 in Toronto. Usually I'm in bed by like 8:39. My life has changed a lot because I had many years where I didn't sleep at all, but now I'm just pooped by 8:30. And that's a good thing, but I'm so glad to be here. I'm so glad to be sober. And I want to be very honest with you because my husband and I actually got into a big fight tonight and I was not in a good mind frame. And I thought, oh my God, what do I have to share tonight? That's what I looked at him and I said, oh my God, like, what do I have to share? And I went out and I prayed and I meditated and I sat with God. And what I have to share with you is a miracle that is my life. Because honestly, the problems that I have now are Cadillac problems. The things that happen and things happen in life, they are nothing near what used to happen in my life before. And so when I say I'm a grateful alcoholic, and if that's weird to you, if you're new and you're suffering and your skin is turned inside out and your life is really dark and really small and you're hearing somebody say they're a grateful alcoholic and you have no idea why the hell they're saying that, because I know. When I came in and I used to hear people say that, I'd be like, what the hell are you talking about? You're sitting in an AA meeting. What do you have to be grateful for? But truly, I am grateful because everything that I went through, and as dark as my life got and as small as my life got, I was led to these rooms and I was lifted from the gates of death and insanity and brought into a life today that is beyond my wildest dreams. And if you had told me 10 years ago or nearly 11 years ago that I would have had the life that I have today, there's no way that I would have believed you. No way. So I'm going to share with you what it was like, what happened, and what my life is like today. So a bit about my childhood. I was actually born in Iran. Both of my parents are from there. And back then in Iran, there used to be a king and a queen, the Shah of Iran. I don't know if any of you are familiar, but and my father back then, we were closely affiliated with the Shah of Iran. He was politically involved. And we lived a really nice life. We were very fortunate. And I remember that at the age of six, my life just turned upside down. There was an internal revolution that happened. And they were after anybody that had anything to do with the king. And my father was one of them. And so we had a tear gas thrown into our house. That was a first of many events to come. And our house was surrounded by men with machine guns who were waiting for us to come out. And it was me and my father and my stepmom. My parents had just separated about a year before that. And my father jumped on us and we were all over the floors just trying to kind of dodge these people. It was just a crazy, crazy time. And we actually got away from that situation. And a few other events like that happened and then came to a point that we had to escape from Iran because we couldn't legally leave. So we headed for the mountains. And as I said, my parents were divorced and my mother stayed there and me and my stepmom and my older sister and my baby sister, she was a toddler and she was on a backpack on my dad. And we headed for the mountains. We went on quite quite the adventure. We went through like 30 hours through deserts and up and down, and it was freezing cold, minus 30, and we all had frostbite. We slept in caves. They found us. The police found us in the way, and we had to run with the horses, and we got away, and it was just a crazy story. And we made our way to Turkey. From Turkey, my grandmother lived in the States, and she connected us with some people, and we stayed with them for a while. And then from Turkey, we made our way to France. And my father was also very well known in the karate world. He was the founder of karate in Iran. So that's kind of what saved us. The Karate Federation of France sent us an invite, and we went there, and we were just basically on the streets with our suitcases with no money and nowhere to go. And we started our lives from scratch. So that's just a little bit about my childhood, but it's not at all the reason that I'm an alcoholic. My brother went through the same thing. My sister went through the same thing. They didn't become alcoholics. Alcoholism to me is, as I said, it's that emptiness that I've had my whole life, that God hole that I've had. And that I threw up my life. Eventually, I tried to fill with anything that I could get my hands on. And it worked. For a long time, it worked. And this disease is definitely progressive. And that's how my story is as well. And it's funny because when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought I had a drinking problem. And to my surprise, I found out that I really didn't have a drinking problem, that drinking was my solution. It was my medicine. It's what made things okay for me for a very long time until it stopped working. My problem is in my head. It's I have a thinking problem. So drinking for me started in my teens. We made our way to Canada, and that's where I am now. And yeah, I started dabbling into it in my teens. And, it was a party for many, many years. And there was years to come until consequences started to show up in my life and destruction. In my early 20s, I started to bartend. And that's when things really started to pick up for me. Bartending was just, I just felt at home, and the booze was there, and the crowd and the people, and I just loved it. And I was like a kid in a can. I started like 2-3 days a week, but I was really good at it, and I was really good at drinking. And I remember I had my own bottle of vodka in there, and I'd serve one and I'd drink one. And next thing you know, I'm in the after hours scene and going out and getting connected with all the right people. And Brian, when you were talking, I was really connecting with a lot of stuff you were saying. Outside, I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am definitely an alcoholic, but for me, I got introduced to a lot of other stuff. And for very many years, my nickname was Cocahontas. Yeah, Cocahontas. And you know that it just, what that did for me is I loved it. It just made the nights were longer. It allowed me to drink more, and the party just never stopped. I remember I was living with my roommate with this little accountant girl, and she would get up in the morning to get up and go to work. And me and my crew would be sitting in the living room, and there'd be a cloud of smoke, and there'd be bottles of vodka and JD and smokes. And she'd just look at us and go, what the hell is wrong with you people? Anyway, that party just, you know, and at first it was a social thing. It was fun. It was social, and we drink and we do all kinds of stuff and talk for days and just have lots of fun. But over the years, it started to become less social and just more me behind closed doors. And I don't want to spend too much time in talking about all the drunk times and all the mess, but just to draw a picture after a few years of how it happened, it was me behind closed doors. And for an alcoholic like me, it's like, when I start to drink, I have no stop button, right? So whatever I put in me, I don't stop. I can't stop. I have no control of that until everything is done and complete. There's nothing left. The way that I like to drink and the way that I like to snort and the way I like to smoke and all of that, I just like, I kind of like to do it by myself because I don't even think anybody could keep up with me. So it would be me behind closed doors going on. The party would go on for days. And say by the end of the third day or fourth day, then the sun is coming out and I'm running out of stuff and I got no more booze. and I'm just left with me, and that sun is about to come out and the birds are chirping, and I just want to kill myself and I want to shoot those birds with a BB gun. I'm not feeling it. I don't like the sun. I want it to be dark. I want it to be raining. I want it to be just like the way that I felt inside. I couldn't deal with sunlight. I can't deal with reality. And that's how it was. And it just, you know, and what would happen is that I would just, for some people, they stay indoors and they try to sleep. For me, I tried to get out. I would try to get out, because for me, staying indoors was even worse. So I would actually try to make myself go out and do something to feel like I'm part of the society, and force my way out there. And I remember when I felt like an alien, you know, I felt like just, I felt so alone. I would look at people and that were healthy, and families, and people that had kids and married and all this stuff. And I would be like, wow, what is that like? I mean, it had been a while now that I had laughed, and when I would see people smiling and happy, and it just felt really, it was weird to me. So this continued on for quite some time. And then did what? The next day I would start to feel better, and the ego would rebuild, and I would, you know, in the morning I would say to myself, I'm not going to drink tonight. And then a few hours later I was back at it. Right. So what happened is in about 10 years into this, I decided that, you know, I really want to leave this life. And I think I want to leave the bartending, and I want to leave these people. And so what happened is I was on 5 hits of ecstasy in an after hours, and I met this guy, and he looked really good, and we were attracted to each other. And of course, when you're like a crazy person, you're going to attract the same kind of person to yourself, right? So him and I just hit it off. So I said, yeah, let's, you know, so we got serious, and he said to me, let's get married, and let's go to, I have this really great job opportunity in California. Let's move out there together and start a life. And I said, yes, that sounds good. That's my ticket. And I said to my family, I'm leaving the bartending, and I'm going to go and be a wife, and I'm going to start a family, and I'm done with this life. And I really meant it. I really wanted to. I wanted to be normal. I didn't want to continue that life anymore. And so I did. I threw all my stuff in a truck. I, you know, shipped all my stuff out to California. And he went out there, and me and a girlfriend of mine jumped in my car, and we went for a 5-day bender. I don't even remember getting there. We were so drunk and high, though. I can't even believe we made it there alive. Vegas, we were in Vegas for a few days, but everything was a blur. So him and I, me and this guy under the same roof, and he was an alcoholic like me as well. It was just, so the problem was that I went there and I wanted to get away from this life, but the problem was that I took myself with me. And so I crawled into the bottle, and things got really ugly. And now I was out of my element, and was away from my family. And I hit a really, really gross bottom when I was in California. And after a year, I barely could even come back, but I came back to Toronto. I drove back to Toronto, almost like 5 days straight without stopping, because I just was running away, because it was just an insane, insane life over there. And I moved back in with my parents. And at this time I was in my early 30s. And I remember going back to the house that I grew up in, and moving into the little room that I was in when I was a teenager. And I remember my father looking at me in the face and saying to me, "What's wrong with you?" With such shame. You know, and I didn't know, and I didn't know what to tell him. And I was so full of remorse, and I felt so low, and I had nothing, you know, like I was completely broke, and I didn't know what to tell him. I didn't know why I was broke, and I was sad, and all I could do was drink. And when he looked at me and said, "What is wrong with you?" I had no idea. And all I could do was just drink. And when they told me not to, it was like, they wanted to take away the air that I was breathing, because it's the only thing for me that made things okay. It's the only thing that allowed me. It was my medicine at that time. And when they told me stop drinking, I was just, no, I just couldn't fathom that. So I left my parents' house. I moved in with my brother, my older brother. who also got in the way of my drinking. So I left there and I moved into some dumpy little apartment. And I went back to my bartending, and this went on. This darkness just went on, and my life was just getting smaller and smaller and darker and darker. And I just kept on it. And ironically, how I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous was I used to drink with this girl. And I remember one night when we were drinking, she told me about AA. She said, you know, I went to this meeting, and she started telling me about it. And I said, oh, that sounds like a bit of a cult to me. And but one weekend after a big bender, I said, okay, you know what, maybe I'm going to go check this meeting out. And I went with her, and I went to this, I went to my first meeting. And I remember that the speaker that was sharing that night, incredible speaker that day. And I just sat there and I cried and I cried and I looked around and I was like, wow, I'm not alone. This is amazing. And the seed was definitely planted for me. My disease was not done with me yet, because you see, this disease is like not done with you until it's done with you, until it's chewed you up in so many different ways and you've smacked your head on the wall so many times. It still wasn't done with me. So I left that meeting, and I remember it was the beginning of summer, and how it was like for me. I would get up in the mornings and I'd have the shakes and I'd have to quiet my nerves by drinking. And I would be walking to the liquor store and my feet would be taking me. I didn't want to go. And this continued on for that whole summer until I remember after like a 4-day bender behind closed doors, I was out of vodka, I was out of cigarettes, I was out of everything, and the sun was coming out again, and I wanted to die so bad. I just was done. And I fell to my knees. I looked in the mirror and I couldn't look anymore. I couldn't look at myself. I couldn't. And I fell to my knees, and I remember that I had not prayed like that, but I prayed. I prayed and I said, please help me. Whatever is out there, please help me, because I don't want to live this way anymore. And I meant it from the bottom of my soul. And I know God was listening. I know God is always listening, in fact. But that day, I know he heard me, you know, I found myself in the rooms a few days after that. And this was 2006. I walked into this meeting my head was down, and I walked in filled with shame and remorse. And at this time I had nothing left in me anymore. I had no relationships. My family wanted nothing to do with me. I was completely broke. I just didn't have anywhere to go. And I was welcomed in this Alcoholics Anonymous meeting with all these bright-eyed and bushy-tailed people that were like a little bit annoying. What are you so happy about? But I had, you know, I went in there and I sat my tushy down. And, you know, they said to me, pray. They said, pray to just stay sober. And I thought, okay. I'll do it. And those were the beginning steps. And they said, just wake up in the morning and pray for the willingness to just stay sober for that day. And I listened to what they told me. And at night, I'd say, thank you for keeping me sober. And so now I had been out there for nearly 20 years. I couldn't draw 2 hours of being sober. And one day turned into 2 days, turned into 3 days, turned into like a week, 2 weeks. This cloud started to lift from me. And wow, I was like, I got that pink cloud. And I joined this group and I started becoming part of, I started doing service. I got a sponsor. I started to do the steps and I started to wake up. And I remember I was so excited about life. I would wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and that pink, I was riding that pink cloud. Like it was just going out of style. It was crazy. I remember that. The pink cloud is beautiful, but unfortunately it doesn't last, my friends. And this has to be followed up with some strenuous work in the program. But at that time, it was a really nice glimpse of sobriety. So what happened is that my life drastically shifted and changed as a result of working the steps and making amends. And my family was welcoming me back. And financially, I was getting back together. Like I actually started a business, And my whole, like, it just was crazy. I had 9 months of sobriety and my life was completely shifted upside down. It was unbelievable. And so what happened for me is that I started to get a little bit cocky, and I took my foot off the gas, which an alcoholic like me cannot afford to do. And that was a harsh lesson that I learned, is that I started to feel important and I felt like I got this thing under control. And I stopped attending as many meetings. I started dating this pilot. I fell in love with this pilot, and we used to travel, and I'd go to dinner with him. And I didn't tell him at first that I was an alcoholic. And we would go to dinner and he would drink red wine in front of me and he'd swoosh his glass. And at first I was like, no, this is okay. I got this, it's nothing. But after a while, that red wine was talking to me. It was starting to look really yummy. And I wasn't talking to anyone. I wasn't telling anything. I wasn't telling anybody. And so the thing with my disease is that it's always doing push-ups. It's always there. And my self-will was talking to me. And I ended up at a party with a glass of wine in my hand. Just like that. Cunning, baffling, and powerful, right? And so I took a couple of sips of this wine and I started to feel all fuzzy and nice, and I put it down, nothing happened, and I went home. And I thought, oh my God, I'm not an alcoholic. I really truly believe that. I mean, after all of the, ass kicking that I had from this disease, and I come in and I get myself together, and then That's how powerful this disease is that I actually went home and I thought, like, no consequences, nothing happened. I was able to put it down. Like, this is okay. And I have this really powerful alcoholic brain that is very good at rationalizing. And I controlled it and I didn't touch another glass of wine for another couple of weeks. And when I did, it was just another couple of sips and I put it down. And then it took, in about a month, it escalated. And then it took about 2 months before I went to a quadruple martini. And then I said, no, it was the blow that was the problem. I'm not going to touch that. 3 months later, I'm right back at it behind closed doors. And so now I'm out for 5 years. Okay. So what happened is that I got the alcohol in my system, and that craving has kicked in and I can't stop it. I have awoken the giant and I can't stop it. I can't. And I don't have that initial willingness that I did when I came in and everything around me was destroyed and I had nowhere else to go. That initial hunger and willingness, because I still kept the outer things. I still had my business and a nice condo and a car and everybody. I was putting on a face for everyone that I was okay. But I was sneaking it, and I was coming to meetings and I was lying to everyone. I was meeting with my sponsor and I was going to drink after. And so I had one foot in and one foot out for 5 years. In fact, I even picked up a 1 year medallion and I wasn't sober. I actually went up to the podium, and I have to tell you this because I am a very good actress. That's the kind of alcoholic I am. I can lie to you and you will completely, and who am I lying to? I actually went up to the podium and I said, thank you for my sobriety. Thank you this, thank you. And so for 5 years until it just, this disease just destroyed me. And I remember that at the end of it, I was completely suicidal and nobody even really knew. Like, I still, as I said, kept all the outer stuff. And I was just, I remember I'd go to my office and I'd lay on the floor because I hadn't slept for 2 days, and I would just lay there. And so after about 5 years, I remember I was, the sun was coming out and I had been drinking for about 4 days, and I was on the ground just crying. And I called a woman, her name is Heather. She actually lives in California. My sponsor lives out in California. And she's been my angel over the years. God puts angels in our path, and he talks to us through them. And she is definitely one of those for me. And at that time I said to her, I said, Heather, I'm not going to get this thing. I'm one of those people it talks about in the book that just don't get it. I'm one of those people. And she said, no, don't say that. She said, just go get up and go to a meeting. I said, I can't. She said, just do it. She was on the phone with me for 2 hours, and I finally put on my dark, big glasses and I was shaking, and I went to a meeting. It was a 12 o'clock meeting, And I remember this elderly lady was sitting outside and she saw the pain in my face and she said, come sit beside me. And I went and I held her hand and she said to me, you know what? God has graced you. God is blessing you. You need to take his hand. And I don't know what happened to me, but you guys, I'm telling you that at that time I was done. I was done with my ways. I was done with that life because that life was just, it was, I was going to either just be that way or end up dying. And I had the gift of desperation. It's such a beautiful thing, that gift of desperation, because I just had it, you know? And when she said that to me, something happened in that moment. And I just had the willingness to do anything that it takes and to shut my mouth and to open my ears and just do and take action. So I walked into that meeting and that was almost 11 years ago where I picked up my chip and I have not felt the desire to drink or to use since then. And but for the grace of God. And so what I did was that I took some serious action. I got a sponsor. I was doing two meetings a day because I had at that time I needed to do that. I needed to. I was praying morning, night, throughout the day. I dove into the work and I dove into the steps. And I had a spiritual experience as a result of working the 12 steps. That's what happened, right? And it's incredible. This design for living, the spiritual principles that we have are an incredible thing. You know, my whole life I had been blaming exterior people and outside things for what had been wrong in my life. And when I started to do this work, I started to become present to, oh my God, no. All those fingers that I was pointing out all my life were turning back to me. It's me, right? I start to put pen to paper and do inventory, you know, my fears and my resentments and look at my character defects. And it's an incredible thing. And to start to make amends to all the people that I had trampled and harmed all throughout the years and win a piece of my soul back every single time that I made amends, right? And hurt people and continue to work the steps. Steps 10, 11, and 12, which I think are the meat and potatoes of our program and that I need to work daily today in my life. 10 and 11 and 12, continuing to keep housekeeping and prayer and meditation and being of service and giving this thing back and being of service in every area of my life. And my life just started to shift and change and completely turn into something unreal. And you know, that selfish, self-centered human being that I was that didn't give a damn about anyone, I am not that person anymore. Today, I can tell you that I can hold my head up high. I've learned some serious, beautiful values in this program: responsibility, integrity, humility. My life is so big and so beautiful and full. I met my husband in the rooms, we are soulmates, definitely soulmates, and he's my best friend. And I'll tell you that we've had our ups and downs. We've actually had separation, and we have made it through. Because we've done many inventories and we've looked at ourselves and we've seen it as an opportunity to grow. And how can we work on this and bring God into it, you know, bring our sponsors into it and bring God into it and grown as a result of it. I met him, we got married a year after, and I was 40 years old and we wanted to get pregnant and we were at the doctor's and the doctor said to me, I'm sorry, ma'am, but you got less than like 5% chance of getting pregnant. And my husband and I held hands and looked at the doctor and said, but you don't know the God that we know. And I got pregnant. I got pregnant and we have a 6-year-old boy who is the love of my life. Because when you walk with God, miracles happen. And miracles have happened in my life. Definitely happen in my life when I walk with God. When I first sobered up, and I told you guys that, remember I said my father would say what is wrong with you? So when I sobered up and I got my head out of the sand, my father got diagnosed with multiple myeloma. He got sick, and I was with him for 5 years by his side. We were inseparable. I got so close with my dad when I sobered up, and I just realized, like, I became too present to what's really important in life. And my dad and I were best friends. I took him all over the place. We went to Brazil to travel. We went to Washington. We went all over the place. And I was with him every day. And it was truly incredible. I was with him until his last breath. And I held his hand. And I could tell you that those kinds of gifts, if I wasn't sober and if I wasn't walking with God, I would not have had those 5 years with my father. I still feel his presence with me right now. But that was such an incredible gift. And we did some pretty incredible. I remember one day, I'll tell you guys this little story, because when I meditate, I know God talks to me. And one morning when I came out of meditation, I called my dad and I said, "Daddy, we have to go to Washington." His mother was there and she wasn't well. And my father hadn't seen her and he wasn't doing well. He had like a bag of medication. He was on a wheelchair. And I said, "Daddy, we have to go. I'm booking us a flight." And he said, "Why?" I said, "I don't know. We just have to go." We went. I dragged him through the airports with his wheelchair. We went to see his mother and he hugged her and he kissed her. And when we came back to Toronto, she passed away right away. And I knew God wanted me to do that, to take him. And he said his goodbyes to her. So incredible things like that happen, you know. I told you that my parents were separated. And when I was 6 years old, I didn't see my mother for about 15 years when we left Iran. She lives with me now. She's 82 years old and God brought her to me and I'm taking care of her. I have the opportunity to be a good daughter and to care for my mom. And he's blessed me with that. I'm able to be a good mom and to be a good sister. When my father passed away, I was like a solid person for my brothers and sisters. You know, I was bringing God into it. See, this program is not about just me sitting in a Zoom meeting and talking it. It's about walking the walk. It's about bringing God and this program into every aspect of my life, into all of my relationships, into my work, into my marriage, into my everything. And man, I'm not perfect. I have so many character defects. I have reactions. I'm constantly making amends, but I'm working it. I'm trying to. Oh my God, my mother lives with me and I love her to death, but she is my biggest trigger. She's very set in her ways. And I don't know if any of you guys can relate, but I'm constantly making amends to her. And it's okay though. As long as I keep doing that, it's my son is 6 years old and he's the love of my life. We live in a happy home. We live in a sober home and we laugh and we play. And I used to think sobriety was so boring, but I've had the best times of my life in sobriety. I've been on trips. I've done so many wonderful things. I live in a beautiful home. And, so there's curveballs and life, things happen in life. Just because I'm sober doesn't mean that life doesn't happen. Like, of course, life happens, you know. It's not lollipops and rainbows and sobriety all the time. But the difference is that I have the tools. It says spiritual principles will solve all my problems. In our book, right? It doesn't say I'm never going to have problems. There's pandemics, there's sicknesses, there's deaths. But instead of when things happen, I turn to God. I turn to my sponsor. I turn into what can I do to internally change and to help others. I have the opportunity to sponsor women. And what a gift that is to be able to give this thing back and to watch their lives transform, right? And to see the light coming up in their eyes. What a beautiful gift that is. I told you guys that I started a business when I first sobered up, and I truly believe that when we walk with God, God connects us to our bliss, and I know that this, what I'm doing now, is definitely my bliss, and I love what I do. I own a recruitment company, and I have the opportunity to be of service and help others to find work, And it's a very successful company, and I have employees now. From the person that I was, that was unemployable and bartending, and I'll tell you that I bring God into work. You know, like nobody's an alcoholic, but when we have team meetings, we read spiritual things, and we talk about vision boards, and we talk about energy, and we talk about bringing God into it, and we talk about being there for others. And when I'm practicing that and bringing God into my business and into my day and being of service to others, not just to make money, but just be of service and to be there for others, I'm happy and I'm successful and I'm making money. And I give back, because that's when I walk with God, I need to give back in every area. And financially as well. I'm very proud to tell you that a few months ago, we funded and built a school in Senegal for kids through my business. And that's something that it's a dream that I always had. So it's been on my vision board, and it came to fruition. And it was an incredible thing watching these people holding up my company name and saying, thank you, Beyond Bilingual. It was incredible to see that I'm able to give back in that way. You know, it's such a blessing. And I think that if you're struggling and things are just really, really tough and you can't stop, please don't give up, because this is the only place that is going to be. If you're an alcoholic like me, this is it. You got to get a sponsor, and you got to do the work. You got to do the steps and just stay patient with it and pray, because God is listening. And if you're here tonight, you be sure that God is listening to you. And I think that's all I got for tonight. Thank you so much for letting me come and share with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Offseat. Let's give another big round of applause.